When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Sternke. I'm here with Ben Hardman, co-founder of Gravity Leadership, and your co-host for today.
Yes, it's a double Ben day, which is always the best day.
The double Ben day, yep. We'll forego all the jokes about which one is the other Ben, because... Yep.
I think we've done that before. I think we've probably done the double Ben day also.
Probably.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of new material when it's just the two of us.
We just go back to the oldies, but the goodies. We're eager to bring this interview. Ben and I did this interview with Todd Bolsinger months ago, wasn't it?
It was way back in the day.
So a lot of this series that we're doing on leadership right now was recorded a long time ago, and for some reason we just never have gotten around to releasing these until now. But Todd,
it's a really good one though. Todd is great.
Todd is so good on some of this stuff. His book Canoeing the Mountains is primarily what we talk about here in relationship to. I think when we recorded this, COVID had just hit. Mm-hmm. The pandemic had just hit. Everybody was still freaking out. I mean, not that we're
unlike now
when everybody's fine.
When everybody's settled down and fine. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, I think the difference was back then we were still just like, what is going on and what is happening and how do we lead our churches and we're exhausted and what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And so my mind went back to Canoeing the Mountains because, his book is all about adaptive leadership. It's all about leading in uncharted territory. And he uses the brilliant metaphor of Lewis and Clark when they were taking their expedition out west, hitting the Rocky Mountains. They were not anticipating mountains. They thought they were going to take a river to the Pacific Ocean. And they hit the mountains and had to figure out what to do.
Oops.
Yep. So sort of like the church.
It's really a great read. I think that was probably my favorite read of the last year. It's just so good. And he's written a new book that's coming out soon. So we got to get him back on the podcast to talk about his new book. It's Tempered Resilience, which is also a really important topic.
Yep. He talks a little bit about it, I think, in this interview, if I remember correctly. I think it was getting ready to be released. It actually just released in November. So Tempered Resilience, How Leaders Are Formed in the Crucible of Change, which is taking maybe one of the concepts that he talks about in Canoeing the Mountains and kind of double clicks on it or zooms in on it.
Yeah, so, highly recommend the book. So Ronald Heifetz is the founder of adaptive leadership, which is a lot of where Todd's material comes from, this idea of kind of adaptive leadership versus technical leadership. My favorite Heifetz quote is this: leadership is disappointing people at a rate they can absorb.
There's so much about that that messes with me.
I love it.
First of all, I hate disappointing people.
Me too.
Second of all, if I'm going to do it, I want to rip the Band-Aid off and go fast. I want to disappoint you all at once, and then we can, but it's slow disappointment. Anyway.
Disappointing people slowly over time.
Yes.
2020.
Yes, 2020. Well, listen to the interview. If that quote confuses you and you're like, wait, I thought I was supposed to help people, you need to listen to Todd and what he has to say and pick up the book. Yes, it's great. More needed than ever now for our churches who, just like the Lewis and Clark expedition, we were expecting to be able to kind of ride church services and just the way that things normally worked all the way to the Pacific Ocean. But we
those were our canoes.
We hit the pandemic mountains.
And we hit the pandemic mountains. And now
and we're still in it. We're still dealing with
trying
it.
Trying to carry our church services through the pandemic.
Yeah.
On our backs.
Yep. So, so yeah, the interview is great. Something else we're doing during December that I'm excited about is we are doing a whole series of book giveaways. And there's one linked in the show notes if you want to see what we're giving away right now. But about two a week. We just have these books, extra books that deal with ministry.
Two bundles a week or two books a week?
Two bundles a week. These are bundles of like six books.
It's not just like you get one book.
You get like six books. You get a bundle. And so if you just, all you need to do is sign up for our email list. And then there's other ways you can enter by sharing a tweet or following us on Twitter or, you know, those kinds of things. So, if you do that, then you'll be entered into the contest and you'll have a chance to win, one of these book bundles. And so we've got like, we've already given away, two of them, I think. And as of this podcast releasing, we will have at least two more, probably four more before Christmas. Maybe we'll just go into Christmas. So you can spend
jump
some
in and
Christmas
get some
money.
Free books from us.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got
and
free
they
books.
They just have to sign up for a link. Is that what, how does that
yeah.
work?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but basically you just like put in your email address and you'll be part of our online community. And then you can get more entries if you share the book giveaway on Twitter and that kind of thing. So
that's awesome. I get a lot of people that say to me like, hey, stop making me buy books because you interview these people.
Oh, right.
That's so good that I then buy a book and you're making my book list huge. Right. So I've got this stack of books because there's been so many good folks on the podcast. So we're helping you out. So you can't complain
about
that
anymore. You don't have to buy them. And these books, oftentimes these authors have been on the podcast. So so I think the first book giveaway we did, four out of the six books were authors that have been on our podcast. So, so anyway, it's fun. It's, you know, blessed Advent, happy Christmas kind of, present for y'all.
Yeah.
So
lots of Stephen King and, James Patterson books.
Yeah, pretty much.
David Baldacci, I think is pretty much the lineup,
I only know one of those authors. I don't know who those people are.
It's just trying to throw out fiction paperback writers.
Yeah. Anyway, they're ministry, to be clear, they're ministry and theology books, stuff that's been helpful for us, stuff that our audience has found helpful. So anyway, sign up for it, let your friends know about it, and it helps, kind of all helps us do what we do here at Gravity. So appreciate your participation in it. I think that's it, Ben.
Yeah.
Anything else to announce before we go?
No, this is a great interview. Let's jump in.
All right, here we go. All right. Todd Bolsinger, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Nice to be with you, Ben. Really is.
Yes. Yeah. It's nice to talk with you. We were just talking before we hit record here about, I came into contact with your book. I can't remember if somebody recommended it to me, but there's so much overlap, Todd, in the work that you've done with adaptive leadership and kind of taking that into the church and all the consulting you've done and the work in your own church, which you tell some of the story in Canoeing the Mountains. So there's just tons of overlap in our training process and kind of what you talk about in this book about adaptive leadership. So anyway, I'm excited to be able to talk with you because I feel a lot of resonance with the work that you've done and the concepts that you kind of bring into the leadership conversation. So, but for our listeners who might not be familiar with you, why don't you just give us a little introduction to yourself? Who are you? What do you spend your time doing, et cetera?
Yeah, man. So I'm the Vice President and Chief of Leadership Formation at Fuller Seminary. So I'm on the senior administration. I'm an associate professor of leadership formation. So I mostly teach this stuff. I teach a doctor of ministry in leading change, and I teach one class in our master's program on formation. And basically, I live at the intersection of spiritual formation and leadership, and particularly how to form Christian leaders in a rapidly changing world. So that's what I do.
Would a pandemic qualify as a rapid change?
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, so those who've read Preview in the Mountains read that the big change I was talking about was the change from a Christendom to a post-Christendom world that has been a really rapid change. It's taken about a generation, about 40 years or so, over the last 40 years, which was after about a 1700-year, you know, status quo in the West. So now the pandemic has changed that to so that in about 40 hours, the world changed literally overnight. So I actually had experience in March of getting off a plane, coming back from a speaking in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And by the time I literally landed in Los Angeles, I had 15 speaking engagements canceled. We had closed our school for the fall, for the spring. Yeah. We went completely online. I was revamping a team of 60 people to work remotely. Like, it just, like, it changed literally like while I was in the air. Like,
there's been a few adaptive leadership challenges over the past few months.
Just a bit.
Yeah. So if post-Christendom hadn't caught up to you yet, it's like everybody has to deal with this now. Like, every pastor, every Christian leader is forced to deal with the fact that we're off the map here. We're in uncharted territory, as your book talks about. We don't know what to do. We have no expertise. We have no history to say, I wonder what we did, you know, during the pandemic of, you know, 1942, you know. We have to go all the way back to 1918. And, you know, it's a completely different world. We don't know how to navigate it. So we're forced into what Hardman said there was that we're forced into this this need to move from merely having technical expertise, technical leadership, to adaptive leadership. Can you just outline what the difference is between those two types of leadership?
Yeah, so this comes from the work of some folks at Harvard named Ronald Heifetz and Marty Linsky that has been really helpful. Mm-hmm. And basically what Heifetz and Linsky pick up is technical leadership is really leadership by experts. It's where you have expertise, and it's really important. It's not trivial. It's not simple. I mean, heart bypasses are technical leadership, right? The ability to run massive scientific tests on pandemic. That's technical leadership. So I always say that every time I get on a plane, I'm wanting somebody who's really good at technical leadership being the pilot. So for most of us in, say, the church world, which is the world that I've been in, technical leadership meant we have the capacity to deal with both traditions and souls. We have the ability to handle people and to be faithful to holy texts. So there's a lot of technical expertise that's really important. As a matter of fact, technical leadership is what builds trust. Okay. Adaptive leadership is when you step into a moment when you need to maintain trust because you have to keep going and you have no expertise.
Yes. And we're used to building trust through expertise. Exactly. And so this feels like a crisis for leaders.
Yeah. Exactly. So what we have now is the history of our competence and our congruence and integrity as leaders and the capacity to take people on a journey where they have to learn as they go and they are going to continually experience loss.
Ugh.
So adaptive leadership lives at that moment, in that place. It is where you literally have to stand before a group of people and say, I don't have the answer, and yet we are going to keep going, and this is going to be painful.
Wow.
So important, right?
Yeah. So you see this, during the pandemic, how many people started with, how fast can we get back to normal?
Yes.
How can we hunker down and get through this? How can we, how can we just, give a little more and tighten our belts and, figure out how to put our services on Facebook Live, like all these things everybody did. There's nothing at all. I'm not critical at all. Everybody has to do that.
Yes.
But as the days turned into weeks, it turned into months, you start realizing actually the world is changing dramatically. It may be changed for good. There'll be businesses that will go out of business. There are churches who are not going to make it. There are, I'm in higher education. Higher education has been radically disrupted. I mean, so now we have to ask ourselves, how do we lead through that? And there isn't an expert. If anybody shows up and says, I have the answer, they're lying. Because nobody has had been through this in our lifetime. Yeah. Nobody's been through this in 100 years.
Yeah. And
I think one of the big challenges for us in that is our, not only is that hard for us as leaders, but it's hard for our people as well. They they want us to be the expert. And so not only is it hard for leaders to say, I don't know the answers right now, but we're going to keep moving through it and we're going to discover it together. And for the leader to be the learner in the room. But I, what I'm learning is that my people want me to be the expert too. They oftentimes they just want me to give them the answer, right? They just want me, you know, just go this way. Just say, here's the three ways to solve this problem.
So I say this, and I work at a seminary, and every single person who comes to a seminary is coming to get a master's degree. Like they're going to master something, right? Yeah. And they came to seminary because someone in their life told them, you know, you're like the best Christian I know. You should go pro. and so they think of themselves, and we all set this up, that the people who come out of seminaries are now the masters who are going to help us master the problem. So to stand in front of a group of people and say that we don't have an answer, but we're going to keep going because we have a mission in front of us that is more important than our ego at this moment is really hard. And it, and it's why I talk to pastors, when I coach and when I consult, I say the biggest challenge for most leaders is to overcome the expert expectation. Like you've got to, you've got to literally overcome that expectation in order to lead.
Yeah. Would that be part of the, when you're talking about loss, Todd, would that be part of what you're talking about when you talk about there's a loss in the middle of this? Could you expand further on kind of what that loss feels like and what that loss looks like?
Well, the way to think about this is everybody's experiencing loss, right? So for the leader, it's the loss of expertise, the loss of credibility. I mean, my favorite quote on leadership from Ronald Heifetz is that leadership is disappointing your own people at a rate they can absorb. And so, you know, for most of us who are Christian leaders, I mean, literally, we didn't get into this business to disappoint people. We got into this because we love God and we love people and we want to introduce them to each other and that we believe that is life and life abundant. So to say that what we're going to do is disappoint them is really hard. But the hardest phrase is the phrase, your own people.
Yeah.
It's one thing for me to disappoint people who don't understand what I'm doing, to disappoint the government or the powers that be or the culture. It's another thing to disappoint my own people, the people who called me and asked me to lead them. And there's a sense of loss there. There's also a sense of loss from our people because there's almost no way forward in adaptive change without literally having to figure out what you're going to leave behind. The book Canoeing the Mountains is literally about, you know, Lewis and Clark that were water experts, river guides who ran into mountains. Yeah. And the question is, how do you canoe over mountains? And the answer is, you don't.
Yeah, you leave the canoes behind.
You leave the canoes. And imagine if you're the person who came on this trip because you're the expert river navigator. Yeah. You are the, and they were so good at running rivers, they were better than the Native American tribes. So when there's actually a whole story that when they were going down some rapids in the Columbia River, how the tribes would come out and line the banks because they went, oh, we know what happens. These guys are going to fall over, drown, and we're going to get all their stuff. And they ran those rapids. They were great at that. But they were lost when they hit the mountains. They'd never seen – they had no mental model of Rocky Mountains. Their only mental model of mountains in their and were the Shenandoah Mountains.
Right.
So they had no idea that mountains could be so big, so broad, so rugged, I mean, so tall. I mean, it was, it felt impassable and they had to pass through it.
Yeah. So so part of this is building trust. Leaders are used to building trust by sort of being an expert. I have a master's in divinity. I have mastered divinity.
It's like a superhero, master of divinity.
So I've mastered divinity. So what would you say to leaders who they're encountering this moment? And here we're, you know, this is probably going to air in the fall. And so even now, as we're recording this, churches are beginning to try to think about how do we get back to normal and how do we, you know, which is probably not a good thing to be trying to do. You know, what's the new normal going to be? You know, that kind of a thing. So what would you say to leaders who are, they're experiencing this fear that
If I tell people I don't know, if I try to lead from a place of learning, I'm going to lose trust. Like, how do I actually build trust when I don't know what I'm doing?
Yeah. So this is the huge paradox of the whole thing. If you are, I always say to people, if you're trustworthy on the map, then you'll have that as a resource off the map. Mm. So remember, the things that you need to do every day, you still need to keep doing every day. You've got to still care for people and handle the scriptures well and run good meetings and make sure that your children's ministry is safe and, you know, all those things. Like, everything that you do on the map, you have to keep doing. So this is what makes it so challenging, is you now have to add another skill set. Yeah. And this other skill set requires you to actually now inverse the thing that got you there. You have to actually lead with vulnerability. Mm. And this is a very important point, because I followed up Canoeing the Mountains by writing a book on resilience, because what I found is when I was going and speaking in places and talking to pastors, the line I got back from them all the time was, I think I could learn how to lead change. I'm not sure I can survive it. Like, it's really hard.
Yeah,
and people are really mad and they're disappointed, and I'm not sure I'm going to make it through this. Mm-hmm. And so the book that is coming out this fall, called Tempered Resilience, is a book that is about the formation process for developing the resilience to lead change. And that starts actually in a grounded identity that is grounded in something bigger than your success that enables you to be vulnerable. And that is hugely difficult. But once you get it, you start realizing that everything begins to work around that. So it's a kind of vulnerability and consistency that is both and.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you, so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission, and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
So what you're leaving behind, the canoes you're leaving behind, you're not leaving behind your expertise. You're not saying, I'm going to become dumb at these things. What you're leaving behind is the way that you have used that to kind of build trust. Yeah. And you're learning a new way to build trust through vulnerability.
Yeah.
And which requires, this is where the spiritual formation part of it comes in. This is why I like your stuff so much, Todd. This is like, you're speaking our language here. So this is where the formation part comes in, right? Is I have to grapple with, like, oh, maybe my resistance to being vulnerable is rooted in the fact that I've staked some of my identity and some of my value on being successful. And now when that's not guaranteed, it's really difficult to know, you know, how to lead. And so there's a formation for the leader. And that's a big part of adaptive leadership, I think, that I've found very compelling, is that we're being, I think you say this in the book, and I don't know if this is a Heifetz quote, but like, the most transformed person is the leader at the end of the process.
Yeah, ultimately, everybody will be changed is starting with the leaders. One of the most difficult parts about adaptive leadership is that it requires transformation. Literally, one of the principles is everybody will be changed starting with the leader. Yeah. And if you think about this, especially for leaders, you know, if you've been successful on the map, think about leading a group of people upstream. Like, upstream is hard work. So again, on the map stuff is hard work. Being a pastor of a church, leading a nonprofit organization, those are hard things to do anyway.
Yeah.
But if your basic rule has been to inspire people to paddle harder than to get to the place where there's no water, if you tell people to paddle harder, it is the wrong thing to do. So what you literally have to do is stop what you're doing, reflect upon your new environment, and begin to learn about the environment so that you can give new responses. And that learning is at the top of what everybody has to do. And there's a vulnerability to that kind of learning.
Yeah, and if there's such a huge discipleship piece in this teapot, because it feels like self-aware leaders and leaders who are able to like evaluate their own motives and motivation and see what's going on and name what's happening beneath the surface of their own life are then also able to help navigate and lead other people to do the same in their life.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes when we only deal with the technical leadership, which is like, hey, four ways to have a better marriage, three things to raise successful kids or whatever those things are, we miss the ability of how we actually train others to examine what's going on inside of them and to name that and deal with what's real.
Yeah. So it's one of the things I talk about is, there's this notion that if you can't stand the heat, you should stay out of the kitchen, that leadership is really hot, that leadership is really hard, you're in the fire, you're in the crucible. The answer, though, that I want to tell people is leadership itself is not hot enough. What you actually have to do is add more heat to the leadership experience and the heat of being a deep, vulnerable self-reflection. You've got to add more capacity, self-reflection to yourself, which makes you feel more vulnerable, because that's the only way you'll actually be able to be transformed. And that vulnerability is really at the core of experience of leading adaptive change. And it's the reason why when people get into an adaptive process, you know, Ed Friedman talks about the failure of nerve is the struggle. The failure of nerve means it's when you get to the place where you go, okay, I would rather collude with the people who don't want to go forward and have them accept me. And for us, I'll become the chaplain of the status quo rather than lead them through the change. And I say that seems so diminishing to be the chaplain of the status quo. But how it shows up is like, I love these people. And if they're not going to go forward, I'm going to die with them here in the wilderness. Okay. Yes. But what that is, they don't want to be in the wilderness. They actually want to go back to Egypt.
Right.
So are you going to lead them back to Egypt and back to slavery? That's what they're asking for. And if you don't believe me, you can just look at Exodus, because that's what they asked for in Exodus. Right. Right? Like, so, yeah, they killed our children. But, they killed our children, but we had a great lunch. So let's go back.
Yeah, totally. That vulnerability. So part of that vulnerability is a personal self-reflection, being open to kind of being changed. And it's the necessity of learning as you go. I think most of us as leaders are used to knowing and then leading, like sort of having some confidence that, okay, I know what to do and now I'm going to deliver that. That's, you know, what you said, technical leadership. But learning as we go is, I think one of the things that has struck me is that it just narrows the gap between like what I know and like when it's time to like call everybody into it. And it's oftentimes minutes, you know.
Or actually you're calling people in to learn with you, right? I have a little book called Leadership in a Time of Pandemic that is out that is really about the spiritual practices of going from learning to what we call looking and listening. Like both of those, you're both listening deeply to people, you're attuning to them, you're listening to God, you're attuning to the sense of what the Spirit is calling you to do, but you're also looking at the system and the structures. What Heifetz calls getting on the balcony, and you're realizing that one of the things you're doing in a leadership process is you're looking at your people and you're looking at the context and you're asking, how do our core values and how does our charism, our gift as a people, offer something to the people in pain at this moment? It's not to become something you're not. It is to actually say, what is our deepest values? So I think that what adaptive leadership draws on is you move forward by reaffirming your deepest values. So for Meriwether Lewis, his deepest value wasn't finding an economic water route, even though Thomas Jefferson sent him to do that. Yeah. He was a man of the Enlightenment. He'd been trained by Jefferson. His deepest value was learning. He believed that the growth of human knowledge would lead to the growth of human happiness. So when he proceeded on, it was this mission of finding a water route across the country failed, but our learning will continue.
Yeah.
So the question we get to ask ourselves is, what's our deepest value? Is it having big groups of people who are members of our church? Is it having big coffers? Is it having big worship attendance? Or is it instead the profound, deep discipleship of people who will participate in God's mission to redeem and restore the world? and maybe there's whole other ways we can do that than the way we've been doing it for the last 1700 years.
Yeah. Which is, I think that's so important, Todd, because I think that, that's inspiring. You know what I mean? If I'm in a church where, you know, that's the message that I'm hearing, that we're actually reaching for our deepest values here, that then actually the crisis of a pandemic or post-Christendom, which can feel, you know, devastating. And, you know, obviously I'm not saying that it's not devastating. Like there are real losses here, you know, that all of us are experiencing, but it can also be an opportunity for us to get some clarity about, have our deepest values been buried under something that was easier to accomplish in another world, in another time? And how do we get back to those things? So there's an opportunity in front of us.
Yeah, I had this experience. So at the school, you know, higher education, seminary education is in free fall, right? It's a time of complete disruption. Yeah. So one of the things that we did at Fuller is we started asking ourselves the question, what is it that we have as a gift to the church? And we've always had our capacity to form leaders and our research. So what if we figured out ways to give that directly to the church, even to people who don't want to be students, right? So you can, so we still have students. We still have our graduate division and we give out degrees and I've got two of them. But we also are trying to figure out how we could serve what we call learners, just people who for the lifetime, leaders in the life of the church directly. And so we've started asking ourselves, if people don't need initials after their name and they can't take on the debt of a degree, how could we serve them? Well, that's a radical disruption for a seminary that has been built on a higher education model.
Yeah.
So when I first started, I had a trustee invite me to meet with a bunch of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs because he said, you're doing a startup. And when I gave them my pitch about what I was doing, they laughed at me because they said, your entire pitch is why this would be good for the seminary. The way you frame this problem is it'll save theological education. It'll be good for your institution. A guy looked at me and said, Todd, nobody cares what's good for your organization. All they care about is whether your organization is good for them. So go back out and talk to people and find out where their pain is and try to serve that. And then he looks at me, this is my favorite part of the whole thing. He goes, it's a little bit like Jesus said when he talked about like loving your neighbor. I thought when the venture capitalist is giving the theology professor a Bible lesson, it's a bad day for the theology professor.
Right.
That's exactly where I was, right?
Yeah.
Because we focus on our organizational or institutional survival, not what we have to give to our neighbor. Which is at the Jesus's call to love your neighbor was the most disruptive thing about Christianity in Judaism, right? It's not just love God, it is also love your neighbor, and the two are like each other.
Yes.
That's massively disruptive. And we're still 2,000 years later trying to figure out how to embody that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something deeply beautiful about being a part of a community that is co-discerning things together, that is mutually submitting to one another, where, and I feel like we work with so many pastors who are just so overwhelmed because all the weight of leadership exists on their shoulders, and this weight of being the expert ends up pulling them down, and there's this battle. So could you share just a little bit, like when there is a community that is together adaptively leading and adaptively learning, what does that do for the community? How does that look different from a community where the pastor is the expert in all things?
Yeah.
And there's kind of this hierarchical chart that leads to the pastor, and there's burnout and there's fatigue and all of those kinds of things. How are cultures shaped when we begin to kind of explore adaptive leadership rather than technical leadership?
So one of the key tenets of tempered resilience is that you start in reflection. The reflection is like the fire, but that the vulnerability of leadership requires the security of relationships. That the analogy I use is a blacksmith analogy. If you take steel and you want to shape it into a chisel, into something that would be a good tool, then you need to put it into the fire until it gets molten. I mean, literally till it's almost like liquid. That fire is reflection. But when you pull it out of the fire, you don't just start shaping it. You put it on an anvil, and you want the heaviest anvil to hold that molten, reflective, oozy, vulnerable leader, right? And so what we need is thick sets of relationships. We need partners. We need mentors. We need friends. We need all of them. And the biggest problem that I see with most leaders I know is that even when we talk about community, we default to individual responsibility. And so I will remind people all the time, remember Lewis and Clark are known as Lewis and Clark. Like they're a partnership. And they were a partnership that defied the United States Congress in order to have their partnership, right? Congress told them, no, one guy should be in charge, Meriwether Lewis. Lewis said, no, two of us will be in charge. And we will not tell the men that Congress didn't commission Clark as a captain. And for 3 years, they lived as a partnership. And then they actually even added like the voice of Sacagawea, a Native American teenage nursing mother. You know, we know her as Sacagawea from 11th grade history class.
Right.
But really, her name was probably Sacagawea. I like to give her back her name. They had the capacity to listen to her because they needed her expertise. So this notion of thinking much more communally and much more relationally is at the heart of adaptive leadership. I always say to people, if I was a bishop, I'm not from a tradition of a bishop, but I spend a lot of my time these days with bishops, and they laugh at me when I say this. If I was a bishop and I could get away with saying anything, I would tell everybody who is one of my charges, if you try to lead anything without a therapist, a mentor, or a spiritual director, I'm going to consider that clergy malpractice. My wife's a therapist, and she one time said to me, she said, Todd, I have 15 clients, and if I make a mistake and I'm not under supervision, the state of California will hold me more liable. You have 1,500 members in your church, and nobody asks you anything.
Yeah.
And so the notion that we can lead through this kind of painful, adaptive leadership by ourselves is the most foolhardy thing of all. Yeah. So it requires relationships. It requires partners, requires mentors, it requires friends, and all three of those, and they're not all the same people.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm planting a church, an Anglican church. So, we've got bishops. I should bring you in to talk to some of them. I've got a great bishop, who I think has a therapist. Yeah.
We'll still let Todd see that.
Yeah. It's good. One more thing as we kind of maybe bring this to a close. I know a lot of leaders, a lot of our coaching. There's a lot of leaders who, when they're trying to, they usually come to us because they know something needs to change, right? So that's why they're willing to kind of do some work and that kind of thing. They're like, something needs to change here in my church. And one of the things in your book, in your Canoeing the Mountains book, that I found really helpful was the idea of birthing something new as a way to change the DNA, rather than, because I think the metaphors that we think about a lot are metaphors like, how do I get people to blank? And we think about them as a monolith. We're trying to get every individual to change their mind about this idea. And so we do a sermon series and we try to get everybody on board. Talk a little bit about what you mean by birthing something new as a way of kind of changing the DNA of a culture.
Yeah. So at the core of adaptive leadership are safe, modest, aligned experiments. We're doing experiments. They're safe. As a matter of fact, they can't risk the entire institution. They have to be modest. They've got to start humbly. They've got to be like what they consider prototypes in, minimum viable products. But they have to be aligned with our values. They can't be what we're not, right?
Right.
But they are experiments. And the goal of an experiment is not to say, did it work? The goal of an experiment is to say, what did we learn?
Yes.
And so when a new thing is about learning, then the institution or the organization has the opportunity to say, what are we going to do with that learning? Are we going to invest more in it? Are we going to take it into our organization and change? Are we going to use it to adapt? Or are we going to give it away to someone else because we don't have the capacity? So what is the learning? And that process of experimenting, of creating transformation teams who do works of experiment, is really a way of energizing. It's part of the work I do with a group called Fresh Expressions, where they that came out of the UK, where they talk about using fresh expressions of leadership of church to basically energize the inherited model. And it's in most of the research and the work I do on uncharted territory, it's really helping tee people up with the formation capacity to do safe, modest, aligned experiments.
Safe, modest, aligined experiments. Yeah. And that's a great, I think it's a great way of thinking about it, because I think what prevents us oftentimes as leaders from doing these kinds of experiments is the fear that it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But if you change your paradigm and say, well, that's not about what, that's not an experiment. We can't fail, because if we do the experiment, we're going to learn something. And that's the point of the experiment.
So yeah. The answer of failure, the biggest issue of failure, is to spend a lot of time, energy, and money on what we know won't work. So, like I said, it's like, so I know soon there's going to come a day when we're going to get to worship in sanctuaries again. I'm thrilled. I look forward to that day. I want to pass the peace. I want to be with my brothers and sisters. Yes. But if we think that the answer to the future is to go back to large gatherings of people that were already failing.
Yeah.
If the future is to go back to a failing strategy, that's failure.
Yeah.
If instead we use this opportunity to experiment with some new ways forward, I mean, the millennial generation is leaving the church at a rate of 1 million people a year. So I don't think the answer is to go back to what was not working for them.
Right.
So I think there's something about learning about thinking about experiments as learning. Yeah. And that failure is simply a way of learning.
Yeah. And then we can integrate that learning. It's not like, oh, we're never have church gatherings again. Like,
yeah.
Or that they're bad. It's just, what are they for? And how do they integrate with our whole ministry? It's all this stuff about learning to go down to our deeper, our deepest values, which is not, let's have a worship service on Sunday morning with a bunch of people in the room. Like, that's not the deepest value of any church, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's good.
I think, can I just say one thing for folks if they want to follow up this? So I do a bunch of work on leading in uncharted territory. And here's a simple way to get a bunch of resources. And a lot of these things are just free. It's just, if you just text the word uncharted, 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 to 66866.
66866.
Yeah, way too many sixes for a pastor in a row. Thank God there's an eight in the middle. But exactly. But uncharted 66866. It goes right to a place where we curate a bunch of this material. So anybody who wants to come follow up in these threads, there's everything from group work to church work to individual work to articles to podcasts and stuff. Yeah,
that's great. That's great. Yeah. We've been talking mostly about Canoeing the Mountains, which we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But you've also got an ebook. Remind us what the name of the book.
The ebook is Leadership in Time of Pandemic. It's out. And then a brand new book called Tempered Resilience.
Tempered Resilience.
How leaders are formed in the crucible of change. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to pick that one up as well. And we will put a link to that in the show notes.
Thanks.
Todd, thanks so much for spending some time with us. This has been really helpful. Hope we can do some more conversing, discussing, and maybe even working together in the future.
It's really well done.
Yeah. I would enjoy it. I would enjoy it, guys. Thanks.
All right. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebbe, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.